Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up, everybody, and burn down, burn down the system. May us be exit polls. Wake up the silence.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show, episode number 57. And I'm here tonight with the awesome co-host, Michael West, who is returning conquering hero from Warhound.
Yes. It was a wonderful weekend. I got temporarily banned from Imaginarium, I guess, for not attending, but I guess all is good now, so...
Yes, we're referring to a fun thread that where Michael Nost initiated that Michael West should be banned for missing Imaginarium this year. But it was all, of course, in good humor, not actually serious. But since you were honorarily banned, we are going to honorarily reinstate you tonight. So because we have a great book that actually came out today. That is, I've read it, and I know Peter Walmerich has given feedback already, and then the folks that I know that have read it are just gushing about it. But it's Author's Guide to Marketing with Teeth, and that's Michael Nost's new nonfiction book about marketing for authors. And he's a Bram Stoker Award winner. We know he's got a great background in editing, writing, teaching, I mean, everything when it comes to creative writing. But a lot of people don't know that he has an enormous marketing background in the corporate world. And so he brings all of that and applies it to the author of today in the book world, and then also works in interviews from, little names like Charlene Harris, Diana Gabaldon, Jonathan Mayberry, and we definitely have some, just incredible people that were, included in the interviews and as a part of it. So it's a really easy to read book. You don't have to be like a business, have an MBA to understand. It's written in a language that's easy to understand, and I've already found stuff that I can apply already, and it's just great, great book, and it came out today on ebook and should be available for print any day now, but on the usual outlets. And but it is out now on Kindle, Nook, iTunes, iPad, and it should be Kobo as well. And but that's kind of the cool thing from today. But I guess we got a quick want to do a quick little recap of two events. Imaginarium's where I was coming from, and I still haven't recovered because I really haven't even gotten a day off since the end of Imaginarium, as luck would have it, no rest for the weary. But it did go, by all accounts, it was even smoother than year one. It grew from year one. The new additions like the Rock Show on Friday night and things like that were just a definite hit. And the stage is set for a great year three, and we're definitely looking to push it a little bit deeper away from the early part of September. Last year we had to get that date because of the room space available to us, but we're going to push a little deeper into the month because we want to kind of space out a little bit from all those, big events that happened in early September, which obviously was the source of conflict with you. But we also, have that little show in Atlanta called Dragon Con, which we don't want to be right next to either. So, right. but um, But yes, yeah, so next year we'll be there. But it was a great weekend by all accounts. It ran smooth. I mean, it was a good weekend, and very vibes are extremely positive. We got a new testimonial page. It's just got a ton of testimonials from both authors and attendees. And you'll see what the vibe was just by reading that. Don't take my word for it. You can read what lots of people said. I mean, it was a really, really good weekend. So anyhow, on to you. Tell us about Horror Hound.
Oh, Horror Hound was amazing. It was a big reunion of about everybody who's ever been in an Elm Street movie, practically. And coming right on the heels of the sudden death of Wes Craven, it was kind of emotional, but I think everybody had a really good time, and just really good to, you know, it's always good to get to meet your faithful readers face to face, and also get to introduce your stuff to new readers. I was a bit worried going into the con circuit this year because I'm busy working on the third novel for The Legacy of the Gods, but I really don't have anything new out right now, and other than, you know, the short story collection and book two of Legacy of the Gods, which came out, you know, different stages last year. So now we're to the point where those have been out for a while now, and I was just worried that, wouldn't have anything that anybody would want that they didn't already have. But that turned out not to be the case because I had people come up and get one of everything. So it was a great time, and I just love hanging out with horror fans and being in the, you know, it's like a big extended family. So that's always a good time.
Well, it's like Dr. Evil, kind of to paraphrase him, you know, why sell billions when you can sell millions, of course. So,
yeah, yeah.
You were just
yeah.
fine.
Yeah.
But we'll be converging horror-wise together in October, because you and I will both be at the Fright Fest in Louisville that's coming up
yeah,
on
Fright,
October
Fright Night, uh-huh.
16th there with all of our good friends that are going to be there, a lot of them like actor John Wells and Dale Miller, a lot of the film folks that we know, and you and I will both be there on that Saturday for sure, both of us on Saturday for sure, and be some programming,
right.
But yeah, that's all about horror, so that's gonna be a lot of fun.
If you missed it at Horror Hound, they'll be screening artist and director Nathan Milner has created a short film called The Confession of Fred Krueger, which is a prequel to the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise, and it was amazing. It brought the whole audience to their feet when it screened at Horror Hound, and this is only the second place that it will screen. So
very cool.
It's you know, that in and of itself is worth seeing. I mean, it's a short film, but you feel like it could be on a Blu-ray as a special feature with, you know, any of the Elm Street films, just because it has that feel. Even the composer who worked on it is friends with the composer of the original Nightmare on Elm Street theme and was able to incorporate the themes and whatnot. So, I mean, it feels like it just flows right into the whole series. It's really well done.
Awesome. That's fantastic. And, yeah, looking forward to that for sure. And, the horror genre theme is going to continue tonight because we've got a fantastic guest who's about to roll in here. I want to do a quick shout-out to Robin Blankenship in the chat room, who's an editor and one of the senior staff at Imaginarium. She's hanging out there tonight. And also shout out to listener Regina in Chattanooga, who is an Iron Maiden fan, and that is a segue to our next guest, who also shares our great taste in heavy music, and he is a fantastic author who I first met in person at Context up in Columbus, and just an all-around just great guy, and of course his taste in music is impeccable. Novels such as Heaven, Hell, or Houston, and short story collection Dark Gardens, and definitely a guy that I really look forward to having. And I think with you and me, Michael, with what we like, I think, yeah, and then both in books and writing and also music. I mean, this guy's the perfect guest to have, and I call him our herbal remedy for Wednesday night here, because he is Tom Erb, and you are now live on the Star Chamber Show. Welcome aboard. I think he's there. Do we get Tom? We got Tom on there? Michael?
I'm showing him.
I see him. I see him live. He might have a cell phone connection issue going on, so I'm not quite sure about it.
Uh-oh.
But well, he's actually in the chat room as well, so hopefully we'll get an update from him in just a second. But I see him as live. Okay. It says he's talking, but yeah, we cannot hear him though, because he's not muted. Oh dear.
No.
No.
Oh,
hey Tom, try a different connection, Tom. Just try calling back in real quick, and we'll log you right in. Because we are not hearing you on our end. And it says yeah, there's no shouldn't be anything blocking you.
Huh.
So we'll
hopefully hear
here.
From him in a second. Oh.
Yeah, call back in, Tom. But yeah, these things happen once in a blue moon. Yeah, we always whenever you're doing a live show and you got phone lines
and
whatnot.
Actually, I heard this morning that this is going to be a rare occurrence here in the next few days. They're going to have a super moon with a lunar eclipse.
Okay, let's see if that. Okay, I think we got him back. Let's try. Tom, are you there?
Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing.
Yes, we've
okay.
got him. Okay.
Yes.
We've
victory.
You are on the show finally. Technical issue resolved naturally. Because we didn't do anything.
If it's technology, it's probably my fault.
Oh man. Well. Yeah, I wish we had some Iron Maiden cue just to fill up the gap there, but unfortunately we didn't.
Yeah.
Well, just nice dead air. Rest easy knowing that somewhere else Iron Maiden is always playing, so.
Well, after all that suspense, now you are on the show, and I'm going to say for myself, I'm thrilled to have you on the show, because I really like what everything that you're about, and of course, we want to definitely cover a lot of ground tonight. So, but first of all, how are you doing lately? Give us the latest on Tom Erb.
I'm doing quite well. I've been quite busy, trying to avoid the fact that winter's coming, but I've been working hot and heavy on the sequel to Heaven, Hell, or Houston. About done with that, and then I have a monster novel I want to write. And then on top of that, I started delving into script writing. So the world's been kind of crazy here in Hell's Half Acre.
Well, then we're going to put you to work when you come to Imaginarium next year, because we have screenwriting panels too. So we'll have to get you on everything next year. For sure.
I'm in, you know that. Once the my amazing wife says yes, we're going. So that's the CFO, the CEO, gave me the thumbs up, so we're definitely gonna be there.
That's awesome. Yeah, we had to move the whole convention deeper into the month so we can make sure that Michael West could attend it, but that's gonna be achieved. So
we'll see.
So.
You can't have a convention without Michael West, you know what I mean? I can totally understand.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking. It really is heartbreaking. Yeah, he's always the one. Cheers up everybody. So yeah, we definitely missed him this year. But the good news is that we survived, and it did get bigger, and it ran smoother than year one, and so and all areas it was a progression. So that's the good news. So we've got some momentum, and with Michael West coming next year, then, you know, nothing should stop us. So we should be doing good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
But you just got Heaven, Hell, or Houston out at the top of the year. I mean, because that was like, what, a January release, wasn't it? Like,
yeah, it was
15
here. Yeah, it was like this first week in January, and I feel like I'm slow when I, you know, follow guys like Mayberry who have a book coming out every 20 minutes, you know, so I feel like I need to step up and fast.
Yeah, I don't know how some of them do it, especially like some of the romance authors I know, because, I mean, my God, they literally do have like a book a month coming out, and I'm like, how do you do it?
Just a template that they use, just fill in the blank.
But you have but you had that come out, and then also, yeah, this year you had your short story collection come out, which I thought was great in your write up. You had Herb Garden in your in synopsis of that book, which I thought was great on Dark Garden.
Oh, trust me, I learned at a very young age I had to make the most of the name Herb. You know, you get made fun of with a name, or, you know, the cops come knocking on your door. But, you know, but I've learned how to use it in a marketing way, so.
So that's how you became the heavy metal rebel, huh? So that's where it started.
Yeah. I don't know about the rebel part, but heavy metal for sure.
You do share a love of the Iron Maiden and that kind of end of things. I know you and I talk often about it, and I know Michael West also appreciates our area of music, but that's one thing I know we get into quite a bit. So, but. We got to get you to get some of that Maiden vinyl that's been reissued. That's some fun stuff, I'm telling you.
Oh well, I'm going to. I'm already drafting my first list for Santa Claus, so then that's on it. So hopefully.
Well, I'll just make sure it's not Krampus that comes instead of Santa Claus.
Well, you know, nor my luck.
They might bring you reissued Menudo albums instead.
Man, I hope it comes with a side of shotgun.
Yeah, well, we don't want to be that extreme, but yeah.
Okay. We've taken
a turn. Menudo's pretty bad.
All right, so we have to make sure that the right holiday spirit comes to Tom Herb's house this holiday season, so. I was thinking of Krampus because I just saw the trailer for the new one that's coming out.
I can't wait for that. Yeah, it's by the guy who did Trick or Treat, so I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, that looks.
I did
cool.
not realize that. Yeah, that movie is awesome.
Yeah.
And to show you how geeky I am about my hard rock, that soundtrack by Fastway, which is Eddie Clark, original Motorhead guitarist band, back in the day.
Not that Trick or Treat though. It's the Trick or Treat with the little guy with the sack over his head.
That one. Okay, gotcha.
Pardon? The one you're thinking of is the one with Skippy in it. That's the first one. That's the one back in the '80s, whatever it was.
Whenever I hear Trick or Treat, I think of Sammy Kerr and Gene Simmons cameos and Ozzy Osbourne and, cameos and a great soundtrack.
That Fastway soundtrack, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, that to me is my that's my Trick or Treat. You got me excited for a second, Michael, huh? Darn it.
Well, you should still get excited.
I will still get excited. But as far as the world of Tom Herb, okay, as far as like you talked about a little bit about Heaven and Hell in Houston, let's go into that novel just a little bit more, just to give new listeners a little bit of background about this novel, because that's one of your latest.
Yeah, that actually, Heaven, Hell, or Houston is a ZZ Top song, and this is a perfect conversation because everything that I do in my life and in my writing is based around music. I can't help, I've been a musician since I was 16, and so it only made sense that when I started to write that music would infiltrate that without even much of an effort. And I had wanted to write, I'm a huge Lansdale, McKinney, Elmore Leonard, and John Mayberry fan, so I wanted to write a zombie story and kind of an ode to those guys, you know, that kind of really, I don't want to say off-color, but off-beat, weird Western-type story that's brutal,
right.
Nasty fight scenes and kind of stuff. And I heard, actually, the initial song that inspired me was a Dean Martin song called Going Back to Houston. And then I discovered the ZZ Top, and then ZZ Top became the soundtrack for the entire novel. And basically, it's about this Texas Ranger in 1985. He's an alcoholic. He has rage issues. He's got a fiance and a baby back in Houston. And all he wants to do, he's going back to Lubbock, and all he wants to do is go home. You know, he's always screwing things up. He's always, you know, always in danger of losing his job because he flies off the handle and he drinks too much. And very much an old 50s kind of character, noirish thing. And essentially, when he loses his job and then he heads home trying to figure, oh, my God, how am I going to, you know, fix my life? And at the same time, on the same road is a Cadillac filled with totally psychotic Mexican gangbangers. And if that isn't enough, this is all within the backdrop of a zombie apocalypse. And so basically they will meet up at some point in the novel and crap will hit the fan and flesh will be eaten and blood will be shed. So it's a pretty violent novel, but I'm pretty happy with it.
Well, that is awesome.
I'm glad you're there. I thought I lost you guys for a game.
So is the sequel going to be more of the same?
It's actually a little bit deeper. It's going to be called Whiskey, Bent, and Hellbound, which is actually a Hank Williams Jr. song. But this, the entire universe is part of a novel that I had written on a few years back, the same universe, which has more of a supernatural fantasy element to it, dealing with gods or the undead and terrorists. And so I get more into, I never explained in Houston where the zombie apocalypse came from, but I go into the background in this book, why and how, and there's a prophecy that involves, I'll say it now, a child of light. And so it definitely veers off course. So I hope people who like the first book, Houston, don't get too pissed off at me that I kind of took it off in another jag somewhere. But it definitely goes deeper because what I'm thinking about doing is I'm thinking about self-publishing the zombie novel, the original one. And so I'm hoping I can get, you know, the same people that liked Houston to like this one and buy into my you know, very D&D inspired zombie apocalypse book.
Now, I like to ask zombie authors that work with zombie themes and stuff, being that they are used very commonly, how do you put your own little twist on it, or, you know, the herb stamp, so to speak, on your zombies and zombie world? How do you respond to that kind of question?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the zombie genre, pardon the expression, is done to death. I mean, it truly is, and I think it's reached its tipping point. But where I wanted to make mine different is where, as part of the whole god of the underworld, of the undead, infiltrated his great plan, is that these zombies retain memory, knowledge, and awareness of what they're doing. So they're still part of their persona in there, and when they are eating their children or their dog or their grandmother or their wife, they know what they're doing and they can't help themselves. And they end up crying black tears because they know. But they can't stop. It's such an innate animalistic urge that they can't stop themselves. But they just keep doing it. So it's like, I'll let the kid out of the bag. The god is Orcus, and basically he wants to punish man. What better way to punish man than to let them be aware that they're eating their loved ones? The worst thing you could possibly do as a human being, you know. So that's kind of why how I wanted to make my zombies different.
And as far as like with your writing process, you talk about you know, your love of music and such. Do you listen to music when you write? And if so, what?
Most of the time, yeah. I've got a really cool third bay in my garage that I converted to a studio where I've got my drums way in the back. And I essentially play, whether it's CDs or MP3s or Spotify, through my PA. And
very cool.
And I do a soundtrack for each book I write. Like I said, ZZ Top was for Houston, and so most of it is heavy metal. Some of the stories I've done before had Frank Sinatra for a short story I just did, a lot of that Dino stuff. I've done country, but most of the time it's heavy metal. It's 80s. Yeah, I'm a hair metal dude. Can't help it. No apologies.
I don't apologize. Don't. You won't get any apologies for myself or Michael West on that.
I go from anywhere from Queensryche to Kix obviously Iron Maiden, Dio, Extreme even, Anthrax, Metallica, we're in the same camp, so you know what kind of stuff I'm talking about. And I noticed a friend of mine, Tracy, put Government Mule. Government Mule is another band that I've used and I will be using as a soundtrack, because they're just a kick-ass band. They're just totally, if you haven't heard of them, you should check them out.
Yes, actually, a person on the screen name of Hippie Chick has a very all caps mule in the chat room there. So I think you got a shout out on that one for sure.
We were definitely fellow lovers of Warren Haynes and everything that's Government Mule. So yeah, it's a great band.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, music. I mean, with you being a drummer, and then I can play guitar. What we need to do is get Michael West to learn a basic bass line, and the three of us do a ZZ Top song. See what I did there at next year's Imaginarium. We could be a trio and do something. Tie into your book.
I can just be on a mic going ha ha ha.
That's all you have to do. It's pretty easy. Heck, that's all I do. Yeah, that'd be a great time. I was hoping to do some jamming. That'd be kick ass.
Yeah. Well, you draw a lot of different things, because I think, like you said, you're a gamer. You come from a musician background. You also, like I said, you, of course, have got the literary background and stuff. I mean, you weave a lot of different artistic influences together. Does that help, coming from all those different facets, gaming, music, literary? I mean, as far as your storytelling, I mean, does that all come together when you're working on stuff?
Well, initially it didn't, especially when I was younger, because I always felt like I was a servant serving many masters, and I could never, I have like ODD, so I will, or ODD, I have ADD, I don't know what ODD is, but, and I would flip, I would be hot and heavy into, say, drawing comic books for 6 months, then the drums would call me, and I'd go over there for 6 months, but now that I've got my ripe old age and all the gray hair to go with it, it actually, all those years spent doing all those other things really gave me a really rich bed of inspiration and knowledge and just insight. I mean, being a visual artist too has helped a lot.
Well, that's what I was thinking, because a gamer is very improvisational. A musician is thinking very spatially, and atmospheric in that sense. A art illustrator is thinking very visually, and then you've got, of course, literary roots as well. So, I mean, you've got a lot of different, kind of storytelling fusions kind of coming together there, and I just figured that definitely is giving you quite an arsenal for your storytelling.
Yeah, it has. I mean, the gaming was huge because, whether you're being a dungeon master, you're creating entire worlds and plots and stories. Even when you don't know, even back then, as a kid, I didn't know I was going to be a writer. I was always, from the age of two, I was going to draw for Marvel Comics. That was my thing. That was what I was going to do up until I was in my 20s. And same thing with gaming and stuff. I just created the stuff because I loved it, and now, you're right, it really trained my brain to think in all those different levels, and not even knowing it, I guess it did, since I came to writing late in my life, it really did prepare me, and so that the adventuring into writing wasn't such a, horrific, pardon the expression, difficult transition.
Well, when was the transition into becoming like a writer? What spurred that? With you know, like I said, your different kind of spheres of artistic exploration there with, you know, illustration and things like that. What made you kind of shift into the writing kind of sphere of things? What did that?
Yeah, it was about 2005 or so. Not to get too long and too Irish, but my mom had passed away, and my wife and I had moved in. We bought my folks' house, moved in to help take care of my dad. And my dad was a handful, and if you knew him, you totally understand. great guy, I love him and I miss him, but he definitely was a handful. So I needed a space, so I ended up having this garage because I had just gotten my master's degree in art education. So as a present, my wife basically paid to have this studio built for me, which is awesome. And then I just went and watched one of the Resident Evil movies because I've always been a zombie file, always loved zombies. And as an escape to get away from my dad for a bit, you know, I grabbed a six-pack of beer from the store, came home, and I sat down and I started writing a novel. And a year later, the first book hopefully will come out, The Last in Line, just to throw that out there, the name of the book.
Nice. Well, you know, reference.
Yeah.
Steve, you appreciate this. Actually, I have all three books planned out. It's The Last in Line, Heaven and Hell, and To Hell with the Devil.
No way. Oh, that's awesome.
So
I am impressed.
I figured you'd dig that. But so that's, you know, my father was kind of the catalyst in a good way. So, and I just discovered
there
I loved
it. You go, D-O-D-O Striper right there. That's beautiful.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Hopefully I won't get sued at some point, but we'll see what happens.
Well, you cannot copyright a title.
Correct.
Well, that's awesome. Good. That's good. I steal a lot of titles, not a lot of titles, I steal a lot of song titles, I should say. No, I borrow song titles.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing that I think it can be like is like a franchise name, like a series name or something like that can be eventually protected. But,
so,
yeah, but
I can't do Lord
titles
of the Rings.
Are safe.
Yeah.
That's a series, I don't think so.
Damn it.
Oh, man. But that's actually something I wanted to get into a little bit was you brought it up, and I was talking to you about the gaming and the music and stuff, is your illustration side, which I think is really cool. Do you still, what are you doing? I mean, I know that artists always are doing art. I mean, do you still do a lot of illustration stuff today? And if so, what?
I haven't been doing much lately. I've had a couple of freelance jobs. I have a good buddy of mine, he's actually my tattooist, but I owe him a Christine movie poster painting, which I haven't had a quarter finished for the past 2 years. So that's been kind of on my to-do list. I've done a couple album covers for a friend of mine's Christian band, but I don't have anything right now. I've been wanting to get back into doing something, and I have a good friend, an artist called Agmios that I met at AntoCon. And him and I have been talking about doing a comic book, and another good buddy of mine, we're talking about doing some kind of comic book or something like that. But, you know, it's what's funny is sometimes the drawing is like a nice respite from the writing, because writing does take so much out of you, as you guys both know. You know, and with drawing and stuff, it's not as bad. You know, it's just definitely a different part of your brain. So I really think I want to get back into that. So hopefully maybe over the winter I'll get doing some artwork again.
Yeah, that's so cool. You could actually theoretically do your own book covers with your art talent there.
That's you know, as I get to self-publishing next year, I'm going to be doing just that.
Yeah.
Why not?
That is awesome. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you mentioned AntoCon. That's actually one that I wish I would love to get up to that, because that's up there with all those guys like Tim Deal, right, and the Shroud Publishing folks. And am I correct on
Four Horsemen. Yep, that's Tim Deal and Mark and Johnny and those guys. As far as I know, it's still going on next year. But I don't know. You know how conventions are. You guys have done them, and each year is a new experience. And so hopefully, I mean, it's a good con. It's a great con. I love meeting those guys
at Context. Yeah, the Shroud guys are awesome. I mean, I met them at Context as well, a few years ago, and they were great guys.
Oh, they're fit. And I'll tell you what, actually, I met both of you guys at Context, and if it wasn't for Context, I wouldn't be here. I mean, I wouldn't be still, I might probably still be writing, but Context really changed my life, mainly by meeting like guys like you and then hooking up with Tim and Shroud, and someone like me who's a sensitive soul, they were uber supportive, and they really encouraged me, and they kind of brought me in and made me comfortable with what I was trying to do, and gave me support. And that's why I think these conventions are so important. And now with Imaginarium, I can't wait to get down to there, because I have a feeling it's got the same vibe to it,
Life-changing Context experiences like Stephen Shrewsbury readings and Jason Sizemore Apex parties with Dry Ice Punch. Yeah. Epic times. man. And of course the lizard. What is it? Place, Mike, that we always went to, the lizard restaurant.
Oh, the leaking, was it winking lizard?
Winking lizard. That's it. Yeah. God, all those. I have so many cool memories from Context. I met so many people that are dear friends of me today, like Michael Nost, Frank Hall. I mean, just of course, you I met at Context. I mean, and I think that, like I said, I know Context is currently not. I mean, it's not a convention anymore, but I think that you will see some of that vibe down here at Imaginarium. I definitely saw that coming.
Yeah, imagine
that same kind of camaraderie.
Imaginarium has a very, very similar vibe, I was glad that Imaginarium, came along, because with Context kind of fizzling out, it's good to have, something to still get together and pick up the slack.
Well, what are your conventions going to be like in the next year? I mean, not talking about just Imaginarium, but I mean, what's on your radar for the next year, Tom?
It's as it usually is. It's pretty sparse. Again, you guys both understand this. It's an expense, It costs. I would love to go to like 15 a year. You know what I mean? If money wasn't an issue and all that jazz, it's just. And where I live, there's not that many, and so I have to travel so far to every one of them. So right now, Imaginarium is the definite. AntoCon will be a definite if it does go on, and right now I'm still trying to plan. It's more bang for your buck. You got to figure out and plot out and figure out just which is the best for you as the writer. Because Mike, you were mentioning about how you were kind of concerned with not having anything new out, and I totally get that. I mean, you have to be able to, really rationalize time-wise and fiscally. So hopefully, definitely, like I said, Imaginarium, AntoCon. I would love to do World Horror, but I'm not going across the country. Another one in.
Yeah, everybody keeps, people keep contacting me and says, you need to come out here and do Texas, Frightmare Weekend. I would love to do Texas Frightmare Weekend, but the expense of shipping your books out there, because you're not going to be able to take them on the plane. Or do you drive across country, in which case, they're, instead of, 3 or 4 days out of your time, you're closer to, a week to 10 days, out of your time by the time you do the round trip. So it's something you got to consider. And usually right now, I try to do as much as I can within, 2 to 6 hours, around Indianapolis, where I'm based out of, but I've been down to Atlanta for a couple of cons. I've been, up to, Wisconsin, but, you know, as far as like, you know, out west, you know, people were trying to get me to go to a con in Vegas earlier in the year, and I would love to go. I mean, are you kidding me? But there again, you know, you're looking at, you know, a couple of days drive if you want to take the books out that way, and if you fly, you know, it's you're looking at a couple of thousand plus the shipping costs for the books and everything else, and are you going to be able to make that back? So, you know, it's stuff you got to consider.
God, now I'm sitting back here thinking we need to do the Seventh Star Express like a bus. You know, we need to go on tour.
There you go.
Oh my God, that sounds like fun. If we could all go to Vegas, me and Tom, it'd be over. Especially we could have made it during Danzig's last show of his tour this summer. That would have been epic. Oh my God.
Steven gets a bus and paints it up like the Partridge Family.
I'll put a big Michael West photo on the back of the bus. That would be great. So everybody following the bus would be staring at Michael.
That
would be awesome.
Scare everyone away.
I claim the tambourine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you'd be welcome, Tom, in a heartbeat. We'd have a blast. And speaking of Texas, I'd love to go hang out with that rock star Joe Garcia of Fast Custom Shirts. That guy is one of the coolest guys I know. I'd love to get down to Texas, hang out with him some. Yeah, because I know he does a lot of the horror stuff down there. And I know where is Phil Anselmo's horror convention? Is that in Texas or is that New Orleans? You know what I'm talking about? Phil Anselmo of Pantera. He's got that horror kind of film festival.
Is that in Louisiana?
I'm thinking it's New Orleans,
yeah.
That would be epic if we could all go there. Yeah, calm down to that. Oh man, it'd be over.
That could be illegal. You know, it could be going across borders and stuff. You know, state lines.
It is tough to make things work, though. I mean, cost wise, I mean, it's the best of times and worst of times to be an author. I mean, because you have unprecedented market access, but at the same time, the economics are extremely hard. And Tom, I'd like you to comment on that because you've been, you know, around, you know, some different worlds, you know, with music, with art, with things. I mean, comment on the economic realities of today's author and how you see the modern author world in that sense, the business sense.
What I think, you know, with the advent of a lot of the indie stuff, it's very similar in music to art to writing. You know, the same pitfalls, the same expenses, the same lack of support. And of course, you know, my experience is writing. You don't make a lot of money, you know, and I don't know if people think you do. And I can only speak for myself. I mean, I hope you both are rich and living in houses and have all kinds of limousines, but...
Well, that's my goal. I haven't gotten there yet.
at least a bus. Okay. But, you know, I mean, I'm working at it, you know, and it's... The big guys, the publishers I've worked with, I love them all, and I will do my best not to be, you know... say anything derogatory, but you don't make the money as a writer. You know what I mean? And with my experience, and so that's why I'm leaning towards with majority of my stuff self-publishing starting next year. It's tough. I guess I don't really know really to say other than the fact that you work a lot, you write a lot, and it's a lot of work and not a lot of money. It's book sales. I sell a lot of ebook, which I think most people do. But then you hear sales reports come in from Forbes or whatever it was the past week or so. I don't know if you guys have heard it or read it, but it seems like ebooks are down, but print is coming back.
Michael posted about that today. Michael West actually posted about that today.
Yeah.
It's a
fascinating article, but. It's kind of nice and the bottom line of it is nice that they were originally predicting, you know, books to go the way of music and TV and movies where you know, it was going to be hard for the, you know, writers to you know, make ends meet, you know, even more so than it is now. And you know, the determination of the article is that that's not the case, at least not right now. That you know, more people are hanging on to print. Well, I mean, look at what happened with the music. I mean, it's starting to happen that way with music, in that vinyl actually sold
yes.
CDs last year.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's becoming a thing where, you know, you have your aficionados and they'll pay top dollar for, you know, collectible vinyl and whatnot. And the same thing with, you know, books, I think. I mean, you're always going to have those people who want something physically on their shelves, who, I mean, you can't, you know, it's like, especially going to a lot of these cons, you know, it's like you get the collectors and people who want your signature, who want something that you've signed, and you can't sign a Kindle, you can't sign a Nook, you know, or a Kobo.
Right.
You know, it amazes me, just the people who are still passionate about, you know, holding, you know, the smell of a book, the feel of a book, and you know, they're not, you know, it's, you know, Kindles are great, you know, if you're on the go, if you're traveling or whatnot. The same thing with, like, you know, audiobooks. You know, if you're on a road trip and you want to listen to Stephen King's last novel instead of, you know, getting car sick trying to read the book, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it all has its place, but I really just don't see books, you know, totally going away anytime soon.
I don't either.
Right.
I was just gonna say real quickly, I think there's people perceive value in physical, tangible mediums, whereas in digital mediums they almost see it as something that's not, doesn't have the same value, and that's almost, I think, why they justify, you know, pirating and things like that. They see it as just, you know, bits on a hard drive as opposed to an object, which I think is why,
right,
you know, they more value put in that. But that's it. Go ahead, Tom.
No, I was going to actually, I agree with both of you guys, and I was thinking as Mike was talking, I actually have, like, a private group on Facebook called the Herbal Underground. Basically, I'm culminating some really supportive readers, and I've been taking polls and stuff, and as I said earlier, you know, I've sold a lot of, you know, Houston has sold a lot of e-books, but I asked them, I said, which do you prefer, you know, print or, you know, or e-book, or what would you buy if I were to, whatever my books will come in, what would you prefer? And I was surprised at the overwhelming number of people. They didn't want tangible, tactile books. They want to turn the page. And as an old school dude that I am, that warms the cockles of my heart. You know, that's exciting. So I think it's trending against it.
Yeah,
there's so much digital stuff going on. I was going to say, we have a lot of digital stuff, so much digital in our worlds. I think that's part of the reason I think vinyl and all came back, is that people just do want something a little bit tangible, and I think that's some of the rationale behind it.
Yeah, and I've made that decision before. You know, I've had you know, contracts in front of me from different publishers for different projects, and, you know, one is purely digital or purely digital for a certain period of time, and then there may be, depending on sales or whatnot, a print version, and then there's other publishers who basically the contract's the same, but they're going to do a print version, you know, right out of the gate, and I always go with those, because, you know, it's like I have nothing against digital. I think digital is great, but I got to have the tangible thing in my hand, you know.
Right, and I guess you can't. It's kind of one of those things where you have to be in the middle, you know, like a Taoist approach to things. You can't ignore digital. You have to accept that's a thing,
right.
And obviously a powerful thing. But you can embrace both worlds. And I would rather sell books, man. I would rather have people come up to me at conventions or whatever and just buy my books, you know. It's just so ethereal with digital stuff, and yeah. I guess that's what I had to, I have to say on that. But
well, I can tell you from a publisher standpoint, from that angle, I mean, the one thing that's bad about the print world is just the issue of returns. Because you have to have returnability for anybody to carry you. But if you have returnability, you do get hit. And believe me, you do get hit from time to time. And I think it's one of the horrible things about the book publishing world is that our industry has returns as opposed to most other industries where, you know, you buy a product wholesale and that's it. You know, I mean, store gets it in and they carry it. I mean, but in this world, I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, the bookstores can just, you know, throw it right back at you and, you know, you get hit with some fees and all kinds of stuff. So, it's the one negative, yeah, I think, in the print side of things is and that does make ebooks very attractive to, you know, a lot of publishers, is just the returns, because that's always the big danger.
Well, and not me not being a publisher, I guess I never really would, have understood that. And I can get that side of it, you know. It's a gamble either way you go.
People, because like a book signing, I mean, a bookstore will say, oh, well, that's fine, we'll order 40 copies of the book because they know they can return it. But what happens is on the other side of the equation is that, you know, the poor little publisher, you know, gets socked for 30 of those back, you know, after, you know, the author goes and has 10 sold. And the bookstore doesn't even think twice about it because they don't get hit with that kind of thing. And so, I mean, that's the one danger, I think, with, I think that's why, you know, some people are hesitant to carry print in this day and age. But, I mean, I definitely see print staying around for sure. Just not in a big box store kind of model like Borders or Barnes & Noble. I think it's going to be more of a lot of independent type stores, which is actually not bad because that's, you know, booksellers in those places are definitely the kind of people that tend to be more into it.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of used bookstores in my area pop up. There's a few independent small guys, you know. Maybe that's the secret, you know, is those indie guys.
Oh, definitely. I guess we got about 8 more minutes left, so I want to make sure that we cover anything you want to get into. I know we've touched on Dark Gardens, and we've touched on your novel, Heaven, Hell, or Houston, and anything else you wanted to cover, Tom?
I do have a short story coming out in Jonathan Mayberry's V-Wars anthology. I think it's volume 5 or 6 coming out next year.
Very cool.
I said, I'm going to start doing self-publishing under my press called Drunken Scald Press next year.
Cool.
And other than that, I'm just going to that's about it. I mean, if folks want to check out my stuff at tomerb.com, Tom with an H. I'm all over Facebook and Twitter and all that jazz. That's probably about it.
Oh, yeah, we're not done by any means here. I just want to, make sure that there's, you know, if there's any projects you wanted to talk about specifically, as far as that's concerned.
Other than Whiskey Bent and Hellbound, that should be coming out from Severed Press next year. And then I'm working on my monster novel, Snow Black, and that will be going to hopefully find an agent when that's done. So I have a few projects that are purely agent-based that I'm going to do, and then the rest I think I'm going to self-publish.
What are you involved in as far as the screenwriting side of things? Because you mentioned at the top of the hour that you were getting into some screenwriting kind of stuff. You want to talk about that just a little bit?
Yeah, well, I've always been a frustrated filmmaker. I think it comes from me being a comic book geek since I was a little kid and loving telling sequential stories and things like that. Always been a film guy, pretty huge Tarantino fan, Oliver Stone, Aaron Sorkin and stuff. So I've been wanting to write a screenplay for a while, and I had two conversations with good friends of mine, Greg Hall and Sheldon Higdon.
Oh, yeah.
Both killer script writers. And so now I've been doing my own crash course with YouTube and and reading books and so I'm adapting my first novella, Tones of Home, into a film. And then once I do that, I'm hopefully, maybe I can try and submit that to a couple contests or what have you. And because I think Tones of Home would make Quentin Tarantino drool.
Well, I think you have a lot of natural segue there, because being a comic book, graphic novel type illustrator, I've always, having done film myself and done a feature in short films, I've always found that there is a correlation between the sequential art comic graphic novel world and storyboarding. I've always, kind of seen a lot of commonalities between that. And so I figured it'd be a kind of an easy step for you as a writer and an illustrator to kind of get into screenwriting because of that.
I'm finding it now that I'm being patient with it, that it is actually kind of coming a little easier to me. Because initially what blocked me was the strict formatting of a screenplay. You know, going from a free-form novel to an actual, it's basically a comic book script. Other than you're obviously not doing too much directing with that, but in a spec script, but it's actually getting easier to me.
Yeah, it's so minimalist as compared to novel writing. I mean, that's what I see when I've written screenplays. I mean, it's so stripped down of the style, and they say the more white on the page, the better.
I think it's going to help me, and it will help any writer, any novel writer. It'll help you to write a script because it really teaches you to write lean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really, and again, I'm Irish, I will ramble on, so it's easy for me to do that in a novel, but in a screenplay, you cannot do that. And so I think it's very, very useful. Because actually talking to Greg Hall, he tells me that he scripts out every book he writes. So he has a movie script, then he has an actual novel. So I'm like, well, that's a pretty cool approach to do it that way. You know, it's almost like a great way of outlining.
My novel Poseidon's Children, my first Legacy of the Gods novel, it was ungodly long because I was trying to basically cram as much of my ideas for the entire series into this one book, because I didn't know, if it was going to be picked up for a series. At that point it was just shopping around and try to get the book picked up. And so what I ended up doing, working with an editor, I just started writing a screenplay version of it and seeing, okay, how could I get all this down into something that would work as a streamlined screenplay? And by streamlining it for the screenplay, I was able to cut a lot of the dead wood out and of the novel and find a way to make the novel work better and flow better.
Oh, God, yes. And it really, I've discovered, and you probably have too, guys, that it really shows you where you're repeating yourself a lot.
Right.
That's one of my weaknesses. I tend to be repetitious. I don't know whether it's because I'm afraid that the reader isn't going to be clear in what I'm trying to say, or I'm not being clear as a writer. But the script-wise, it really makes you really things down and really look at it. But wait, I already said this, on page 2. You know what I mean? So why do I need to do it again? So I think it's a useful, useful tool.
No, I think that one of the big hurdles with a lot of writers going into the screenplay world is that, they are tempted to put too much into description elements and do the director's job, essentially. And that's always been, I think, one of the big stumbling blocks to writers that are coming from the novel world and coming into screenplay writing. And you're right. I think it's a great way to really get at the guts of things to learn how to write screenplays and pare it down.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Plus,
Well, we've got about a minute left here. So, yeah, is there? Yeah, we want to give you a chance to give some shout-outs to Herbal Nation, and if there's anything you wanted to cover, we definitely want to have you on the show again, by the way. You are awesome.
Oh, thanks so much, and I really appreciate being on. And I warned you, you get me going. It takes me a while to get the steam going, but once you get me going, I won't shut up. But I appreciate it. I mean, I love both you guys. You guys are awesome people, and I've been wanting to get on the show for a while. I'm glad you had me. And yeah, I will say a quick shout out to the Herbal Nation. I have some really great readers. They're awesome, and they're very supportive, and they rock. And you guys are honorary members of the Herbal Nation as of this evening. So
awesome.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Oh,
thank you. Well, you have a good night, Tom. And yeah, next week we got Courtney Vice on the 2 weeks from now, Courtney Vice on the show, and